All right, here we go. I'm so excited that we're going to start our new podcast, Pierre LeBrun. It's called Two Man Advantage. And I don't know about you, but I'm getting this sort of a sense of deja vu. It's almost like you and I have done this before, right? Are you with
me? Wait a minute. I thought you told me, I guess you were kidding, that you were going to call this Two People, One Brain.
Two Bodies, One Brain. That's what I wanted to call it.
Two Bodies, One Brain.
No, that just merely describes your relationship with me over the years. And not just one person has suggested that it is, in fact, Two Bodies, One Brain. But no, there was not as much enthusiasm for that title as I thought there would be. But, you know, Two Man Advantage, I think that works. And, you know, just it's not even a joke. And it's not even an inside joke. But you and I actually taped the first episode in an Uber after we left the player tour in Chicago. We're headed back to Midway, and we immediately got overtaken by events. So we're gonna do it all again. It reminds me of a podcast you and Craig Custance and I did at ESPN a few years ago. We had to do an emergency segment because right after we taped our normal podcast, Taylor Hall, PK Subban, Shea Weber all got traded in about 20 minutes. Remember, we were like, "Oh, I guess we'll have to go back and tape that." But my hope is
well, we shouldn't. It's not fair to say that the podcast that we taped last Friday on route back to the airport was a waste, because in fact our Uber driver got to hear everything live, and I think his life has been changed forever by listening to these dimwits in the backseat talk about hockey and him not knowing what the heck we were talking about.
Well, I'm hoping that sometime years down the road it'll be like the band and Bob Dylan did all these basement tapes when they were recording together, I think in Woodstock, New York. And years later, it came out as the basement tapes. And I'm sure this will be received very similarly, because I think of you and I kind of like Bob Dylan and the band. But anyway, okay. the reason that we're going to retape, that we're going to redo the first edition of Two Man Advantage of podcast with my good friend Pierre LeBrun, is that we were overtaken by events. First, Max Pacioretty, of course, traded from Montreal to Vegas, and then the next day, but not too long after that, you know, really shocking news out of Tampa, I think, in that GM Steve Yzerman told his players first that he was going to leave the team at the end of this year and spend some more time with family and go back to Detroit and figure things out, and that Julien Brisebois would take over as GM of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And you pick. Where do we start with really significant news on the eve of training camp?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything more shocking than Steve Yzerman stepping down as GM. I mean, the Pacioretty thing was long ago in the making, whether you believe that he asked for a trade or not. Obviously, the Montreal Canadiens and Max Pacioretty have differing views on that. I think to me, it's pretty clear that he was invited a change of scenery last season when he heard his name out there in trade rumors and the whole season was going to hell. But regardless, I think it was a good thing for both him. I think Max Pacioretty is going to have a huge year in Vegas, motivated, new contract, and for the Montreal Canadiens to move on. And you know, I think, believe it or not, I think the Habs are going to surprise some people, at least from the expectation of people thinking they're going to be as bad as last year. I actually think they're going to surprise some people. But Yzerman is the news, and obviously my dogs outside my office here agree.
Good, a little ambient sound.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think because no one saw it coming, really. And it's interesting, I was talking to someone in the Lightning organization last night who said, kid you not, like they, you know, this was a very small circle of people in the organization that found out late last week. And it was really tight. I mean, obviously, Jeff Vinnick found out way before that, but I'm just saying it was kept a very small circle, which is why it didn't leak. And you can just imagine when Steve Yzerman let the players know, on Tuesday, what the reaction was. And it's actually how I found out, because one of the players' agents gave me a heads up, and it just about fell off my chair. And I talked to a GM from another team who then phoned me and asked me what the heck was going on, because he talked to Yzerman 2 days ago, or 3 days ago now, and said he had absolutely no hint of it, that Yzerman was upbeat and they were talking business as usual, and he just was absolutely shocked by the news. But, you know, that's Steve Yzerman. He keeps things very close to the vest, and And you know, the reason they may have been upbeat is because he was obviously at peace with this decision, right? And probably has been. He made it in, I think, late July, early August. And, you know, if you think of Steve Yzerman's career, he went straight from playing to the Red Wings front office, Red Wings U, as he often refers to it himself, learning from Ken Holland and Jim Neal and Jimmy DiVellano. And then, obviously, Team Canada, two Olympic gold medals, and within that, obviously, the GM gig in Tampa. It's been nonstop. He hasn't really come up for air, and I think people really should take him to his word when he talks about, you know, needing to spend more time at home. A lot of people don't know this. I tweeted this yesterday, but, you know, Steve Yzerman's family, his wife Lisa, they never joined Steve in Tampa full time anyway. Like, it was a commute. The family stayed behind in Detroit, and Yzerman would try to squeeze in, you know, his GM life in Tampa with some time in Detroit at times. And I think, you know, at over 8 years, I think that's a lot. And I do think that spending more time with family is absolutely important for him right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so many layers to this. And I mean, let's stay with Steve Yzerman for a moment. He will stay in a senior advisory role with the Tampa Bay Lightning, a team that, I mean, it's funny when you talk about his resume, you know, going from a Hall of Fame playing career, multiple Stanley Cups, you know, playing on internationally for Canada, and then to lead Canada internationally to back-to-back gold medals at the Olympics. And the team he's built in Tampa, now they haven't, you know, obviously had the ultimate success, but trip to the final in 2015, conference final in 16, conference final in 18. And I think, you know, we'll get to this, you know, during this podcast, but, you know, on paper, probably the most complete team in the NHL right now, top to bottom. And, you know, he has very quickly ascended to the top of the mountain, I think, in terms of, you know, when you talk to people around hockey, in terms of, you know, who are the best GMs, who are the people best at their jobs. And I think he's right at the very top of that list. And so my guess, I mean, it's hard to imagine that this is the last we've seen of Steve Yzerman in an NHL capacity, whether it's as a GM or whether it's as a, you know, team president or whatever, you know, so the hierarchy of team building. What do you believe that? I mean, resetting is one thing, but retiring is another. And my sense is that we haven't seen the last of Steve Yzerman, and there will be no shortage of teams. And whether it's Detroit down the road, pending what happens with Kenny Holland, of course, a new team coming to Seattle. We assume if everything goes according to plan, perhaps as early as what, 2020-21. I know you don't like to predict, but, you know, crystal ball. I mean, surely we haven't seen the last of Steve Yzerman in terms of team building because he has been so successful.
Yeah, no, I think we'll see him again. And, you know, again, that goes back to, I think, this decision. If you know Steve Yzerman, you know that he puts in the kind of effort in that GM job where, you know, he's entering the final year of his deal and Jeff Binnick, the owner, you know, talking extension with him this summer, I think it forced some soul searching for Steve Yzerman. And part of that is he can't do that job half-assed. Yeah. I mean, that just shows you where he is with that. And I think that's what produced that decision, is that he knows how much time and effort he has to put in to be a GM. He's a really hardworking guy. And so he'll have to be ready and be in the right place, frame of mind, to do that again when the next opportunity arises. And I think there will be one. Obviously, Detroit's the most obvious one that everyone connected him to. Again, he still has a home there. Yeah. Kenny Holland didn't exactly mute the speculation in June when he signed only a 2-year extension. So it didn't really slam the door to that speculation. But again, I also think that I don't think anything is on the back burner here. I think Steve Yzerman's the kind of guy that, you know, one step at a time here, above board. And right now it's just about needing to spend time with family, and what comes after that in a year from now will come. But I don't think there's anything at this point that even close to being at the back of his mind. I really do think he's going to approach it with an open mind.
Yeah. So when you think about what, you know, sort of the immediate impact, it sets up a really interesting dynamic in the Eastern Conference. You've got Julien Brisebois, who takes over now as after a long period of time learning along with Steve Yzerman in Tampa. Tom Curvers was there for a long time before going to Minnesota in the offseason. And I think you tweeted this yesterday, and I couldn't agree more. I think it's been a surprise to a lot of people that Julian Brisebois hasn't found a role as a full-time GM in another market over the years. I think that's how highly regarded he is in terms of you know, his acumen. And I expect it'll be a seamless transition as he takes over. But it does raise some interesting questions. You know, one of the players that still remains out there, and of course, you and I talked about this before we started to tape, as soon as we mention Erik Karlsson's name and we file the podcast segment later, he will get traded. But, you know, Tampa definitely linked to Erik Karlsson, you know, going back to the trade deadline last year. So it'll be interesting. Does, you know, does Julian Brisebois, now that he is at the helm, is there a change in mindset in terms of pursuing Erik Karlsson or interest in trying to add him to an already loaded Tampa lineup? And then, you know, I'm going to broaden it, because we want to talk about the Washington Capitals, the defending Stanley Cup champions, but they're in an interesting spot too, with a rookie head coach and Todd Reirden coming in, taking over for Barry Trotz, who left very abruptly after the Stanley Cup win in Vegas in game five, first ever for the Washington Capitals. And like Julian Brisebois, Todd Reirden has lots of experience as both an assistant and an associate. He was, in many ways, I think, was being groomed to be, if not the head coach of the Washington Capitals, certainly a head coach somewhere. But still, two rookie guys in very high-profile situations, and maybe two of the best three or four teams in the Eastern Conference, and maybe two of the top five teams or six teams in the NHL overall. What do you make of that dynamic? Does it change, you know, how much of a change is there for both Tampa and Washington as they prepare for really important seasons for both those teams?
First of all, you've asked me like 18 fucking questions during that long, long period. Yeah. We're allowed to swear, right, on our podcast?
Yeah, it's The Athletic. Well, if I was quoting you, I would quote you as saying that in the story. So,
honestly, you covered a lot of territory there, and I started looking out the window.
You know,
but anyway,
you know, when you're talking to me, it's when I take a breath. That's when you have to start talking, because I talk until I run out of breath. So anyway, okay, Tampa, Washington, simplified there. Two rookie guys there. What does it change?
Well, let's talk Carlson. That's what people care about, and I do think that the Ottawa Senators want to trade Erik Karlsson before camp, but not going to force it. I mean, if the deal isn't there, they'll hold on to him longer. But I do think, for the same reasons the Habs wanted to move on Pacioretty, Ottawa wants to move on Karlsson, in terms of the drama and the timing and everything else, and to turn the page. I do think Dallas is still very much in there. They've been there since the beginning, the Dallas Stars, and their pursuit of Erik Karlsson. You know, to some degree, I don't know that Tampa or Vegas have closed the door. I don't know that for sure. Probably still keeping tabs. Probably a couple other teams we don't know about. But certainly, I think that, you know, those are the teams that you have to monitor. And certainly under Julian Brisebois, I don't think anything would change in terms of, you know, how they feel about that player and what they'd be willing to pay. And clearly, those discussions in early July, at least, you know, Tampa and Ottawa had a completely different view on what that would take. So, and I think that's been the struggle for the Senators. And I do think, again, I think GM Pierre Dorion is going to try and really make a push here over the next few days, the next week or two. But I think the struggle for them is that it's a terrible time to try and trade Erik Karlsson after a year in which he wasn't himself because of the recovery from the injury. You know, his numbers were down. You know, it's obviously his standard is so high, but it's convincing other teams that he's still that guy. He's recovered now. And by the way, by all accounts, looking incredible in informal workouts, and looks like the Erik Karlsson of old. So that's the big key for Ottawa is getting that return. But of course, if you're the Dallas Stars or any other team talking to the Senators right now, are you signing Erik Karlsson? What if he's not ready to do that? You know, what if he wants to play out the year? That's a big risk in terms of what you're willing to give up for perhaps just renting out a player for a season. So that's all these dynamics, which is why it's been a difficult trade, not to mention the fact the Ottawa Senators, who don't have a first-round pick this year, haven't given it up in the Matt Duchene deal, obviously have to get that back plus, plus, plus. And so much pressure on them, obviously, not to end up giving up the first overall pick, which will be Jack Hughes in June, as part of this transition. That would be a nightmare for the Senators.
Yeah. Well, I like that you completely ignored my question about Tampa and Washington and the rookie guys, but I'm going to go with the flow because that's my nature.
Yeah, I didn't care for the Washington one. I don't really care, whatever.
All right, well, we'll circle back to Washington in a minute, but I am curious because during our the Basement Tapes podcast or the Uber Tapes podcast, you were quite adamant because we were talking about, the layered dynamics with Erik Karlsson. Can you acquire him? You know, can you put a package together to acquire him? And then can you sign him long term? And there are some teams that might be more willing to look at Erik Karlsson as, listen, we're all in right now. And if it's just until July 1st, okay, we can live with that. And you were quite adamant that you didn't think Vegas, which has been a team in on the discussions right from the get-go, and they have a ton of assets. Jordan McPhee has done a masterful job, of course, acquiring young players, draft picks. There's no question about what he has in terms of being able to put something together. Now, having acquired Max Pacioretty and then signing him immediately to an extension, does it change your view? Because you were very adamant. I don't think Vegas should be looking at Erik Karlsson as a second-year team if he's just a rental, whereas maybe Tampa, you can excuse them given how loaded they are, given where they are in their evolution. They're at a different place. And I wonder if it changes your view on that. Now Max Pacioretty in the fold there. You've got Paul Stastny added as a free agent in the offseason. You got Marc-Andre Fleury locked up, signed a 3-year extension in the offseason, still very much obviously at the top of his game. If you're George McPhee and you can, even if it's just until July 1st, do you still take a swing at Erik Karlsson? Because it's clear Vegas is saying, we're not playing expansion team again, right? Like we're not taking a backseat to anyone. This is a team in it to win it.
Yeah, but I think, my favorite saying is actions speak louder than words. I mean, Vegas does not trade for Max Pacioretty unless they had a pretty good comfort level right before they made the trade that they could finish off an extension with Alan Walsh, the agent, right?
For sure.
So, I spoke to a source and with the Golden Knights who said it was paramount for them to get an extension done with Pacioretty. So, in other words, they're not giving up a highly touted prospect like Nick Suzuki unless they know that Matt Pacioretty is playing more than a season. Well, I don't know why that'd be any different with Erik Karlsson.
Okay.
And I think that, yes, there's this incredible onus right now in Las Vegas to where I'm headed later today, by the way.
Thank you.
I think there's an onus from owner Bill Foley all the way down to continue the momentum and build on last year's magical expansion year and not retreat back into a hole and lose, some of that fervor. So double down, no pun intended. So, you lose James Neal and David Perron and Lucas Pisa to free agency, but you bring in Max Pacioretty and Paul Stastny, arguably offensive upgrades. I'd say arguably because James Neal is a pretty good player for sure. But, and yes, I think the reason they stayed in and out, I guess I would say all summer long on Erik Karlsson is that if the price ever came down to what they'd be willing to pay, they would do it. And I think they would still do it. Although it's certainly depending on who you believe around the league. I don't know that they're the front runner right now. Like I said, Dallas has seemingly just never left out of it. And we'll see what Tampa does. But I wouldn't close the door to Vegas on Erik Karlsson only because they still have other assets. They still have a first round pick. They still have other highly talented prospects. And of course, more importantly than all of that, they still have the cap room. So, we'll see what else Vegas has up its sleeve, but the pressure is certainly off. I mean, that Pacioretty acquisition was certainly a big deal for them.
Yeah. By the way, I thought your favorite saying was, where is the wine list? So I'm sorry, I must've been confused. All right. We're going to take a quick break because we alluded to the player tour. You and I were in Chicago last week and with colleagues Craig Custins, Eric DeHatchek, Lisa Dillman was there, Scott Powers dropped by, we're going to hear from a few of the players that we talked to, that I talked to specifically. We talked to, must have been 20 or 25 guys, very relaxed, very, to me, it really marks the start of the season. And just before we hear from Tyler Seguin or you hear from Josh Manson of the Ducks and Vincent Trocheck, a new dad from the Florida Panthers, for me, that I always enjoy the player tour because it's a moment of calm, you know, before things really ramp up, before expectations are either being met or not, or you've got injuries to deal with and all the kind of stuff. It's a very sort of, there's this sort of zen part of it. Remember, you know, Patrick Kane was our first interview. We ripped on him because he didn't have a subscription to The Athletic. Lots of, lighthearted moments with guys like Eric Staal and Claude Giroux. So I wondered what your, is it meaningful for you, I guess, to have that kind of moment with those players that, you know, you and I have been dealing with the on and off for, in some cases, for years and years.
Mm-hmm. It's the premier event of the entire calendar to get players to be so relaxed and open-minded and talk about things in a way in which I just don't think you can get them to do in the middle of the season when the grind of the season is just suffocating for them at times and there's a mental impact to that. And so it's just, they're so refreshed and laid back and smiling. And I mean, we're lucky. I mean, I think we have the best sport in the world in terms of the way these players conduct themselves, but this event, you know, they're still tanned, they're in a place like Chicago where they're going to have some fun at night. And it's just a great atmosphere for sure. I mean, every single interview we did was, well, you know, we ended the interview by saying, wow, there's a lot there. And I think, you know, all of us who were there for The Athletic got what we needed for our respective columns. But it really is the best time of the year. It's a great event. And, you know, for the players, if people are listening, they're like, well, why do the players do this? It's like a big car wash. Because they can knock off so many preseason interviews with the rights holders and other media platforms in 48 hours as opposed to have all that play out over a month. I mean, it's really for the players, and that's the point of this event. It really makes their life easier after the player tour in terms of minimizing their other obligations moving forward. So it's really, I think it's in its second decade. We've gone to all of them, Scott, and it's really smart.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, that's a good segue. So we'll take a bit of a break, you and I. Catch your breath and pack a little bit if you need to. Look out your window because we're going to hear from Tyler Seguin and Josh Manson and Vincent Trocheck, and then you and I'll be back to wrap things up. So don't go away. right. I refuse to let you ignore my question about the Washington Capitals, but since we heard from some of the players, we talked to at the player tour, and I have to say, for me, one of the most impressive guys was a guy who is now making his hockey home in your hometown of Toronto, and that was John Tavares. And, you know, there is no bigger story from this offseason in terms of an addition made to a team and the attendant hoopla and the buzz around it. And everyone knows what a great player John Tavares is, the former captain of the New York Islanders. And for me, listening to him describe what was a really heartfelt decision and a lot of emotion, obviously, going into deciding to sign a 7-year deal with the Toronto Maple Leafs. You spent some time around him and you've listened to him. What's his impact in Toronto going to be? And what are realistic expectations for a team that obviously hasn't won a cup since 67, but now is two straight playoff appearances, still haven't got out of the first round? To me, like, they're a team, I don't know where to put them. I don't know what to make of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Are they truly a contender, or are they, you know, just a team in, you know, sort of in the mix?
No, I mean, they're absolutely a contender. I mean, they're on paper, absolutely a contender. The question is, can they make it all work in the pressure cooker that now is, hockey's biggest market on steroids now in terms of a fan base that hasn't seen a Stanley Cup since 1967, frothing at the mouth. So how do you handle that as players? And that's the real test, I think. But on paper, I mean, as the Western Conference GM told me in that piece I did for The Athletic, my first day back at work last week, are you kidding me with those three centers down the middle? That team's going to outscore everyone almost every night. I mean, yeah, they have problems on the fence and they need to not run Freddie Anderson into the ground this year and trust their backup more, but it's a super talented team. They're going to have the puck a ton, and still coached by one of the best in the biz, Mike Babcock. But to get to your point about Tavares, I mean, you see his impact already off the ice. I mean, on Monday here, the Leafs had their annual golf tournament where they kind of kick off the year. And of course, the topic du jour was the absence of William Nylander, who, as we tape this, he's an RFA who still hasn't signed. Those negotiations have really dragged all summer long, both sides struggling to find that number. They will eventually. But, and Tavares was sort of the one who, you know, you could just feel he was talking for the team when he said it'll get done, and looking forward to having Nylander back. I don't even know if he's met him yet, but here's Tavares sort of sounding like one of the leaders already. And of course, that's who he is. You know, he's uber character guy, longtime captain with the Islanders and already taken up that one of those leadership roles with the Leafs and looking very comfortable in doing so, I guess is my point. And I think for Austin Matthews, who does a ton of media and there every single day. And we asked Austin that question when we sat down with him last week in Chicago, kind of in jest, but because it's not the kind of thing fans really care about that much. But I said, you know, in your day-to-day duties in terms of the media, what it'll be like to have John Tavares being able to kind of deflect some of that, right? I mean, Tavares will be just as much in demand as Matthews. And Matthews, if you remember, Scott, Matthews' eyes lit up. That's not a joke to him. He loves the fact that there are days where maybe Tavares will take a bigger chunk out of that and alleviate, you know, maybe his day for that day, whatever. But I think it's an absolute benefit for a guy like Austin Matthews to not only have John Tavares carve out a big chunk of that media demand, but also in what matters the most, of course, on the ice is carve out some of those defensive matchups. And I mean, you know, what do you do if you're the other team with your top D pair? Do you want them on Tavares? Do you want them on Matthews? Well, here you go. Here's the nightmare that other teams have faced with the Pittsburgh Penguins for 15 years now.
I think the natural, you know, maybe if you're a cynic and when you look at Tavares coming and you can draw up a narrative that suggests conflict and, you know, Kyle Dubas, the new GM in Toronto, interesting, just before the player two in Chicago announced that there wouldn't be a captain. And, and I think that's a smart, at least in the short term, you know, because I think people want to see, will Austin Matthews be disappointed if he's not the captain, and will there be friction on who is the leader of the team and all those kinds of things. But I think you're absolutely right. And I think if you look around at some of the young players who've been foisted into a captaincy role or a leadership role, maybe ahead of their time or before they're fully ready for it, I think it does impact how – it has to impact how they play the game, right? If you have all this other burden on you – and I think of, you know, one of the guys that was of a tremendous, pleasant surprise, a really enjoyable conversation in Chicago was Jack Eichel. But there's a guy, and I think he was very candid talking about, you know, having to accept his role and look in the mirror and all those kinds of things. And I know that Jason Botterill is looking to, you know, surround Jack Eichel with – players who can shoulder that kind of burden. But yeah, to your point, to have a guy like John Tavares in that room every day can be nothing but a boon to Auston Matthews. And whether it's Mitch Marner and again, William Nylander, when he gets his deal signed, he's going to take a lot of pressure off those kids who might otherwise have to answer for that team in that big media market. And I think that's going to reflect itself on the ice. So I think I'm mm-hmm. I think that's a good
point. Was there a question there, or were you just joining on and on?
I found I haven't had enough to say in the last couple minutes. So, we're going to closing our way, winding our way toward the end of the first edition of Two Man Advantage, the podcast. And I want to.
We never did talk about Washington, though.
Who cares about Washington? All they do is win the first ever cup in there.
But by the way, the Capitals have given new meaning to Stanley Cup hangover entering this season. Will they be sober by Christmas is what I want to know.
It was terrific. Evgeny Kuznetsov came in and talked about having the cup in his hometown of Chelyabinsk, where he was actually married in his own hometown arena. But the best conversation about the cup was with TJ Oshie, who described how the cup stand, I didn't even know what a keg stand was before, but now the cup stand, which now they're not supposed to do, he described how that happened. But what's his best line, though, was, I think, to you at the end, and he was like, I'm glad it's not October 1st now.
We were talking about the difficulty to repeat and the stress on bodies of players who have played that late in June, and I had shared with TJ Oshie the story of Duncan Keith, because I'll never forget this. Duncan Keith, after the first cup in Chicago, telling me in the middle of the second season that he just never felt his body was back at 100%. Now, of course, Duncan Keith, played 40 minutes a night that year, and that's when Oshie responded, well, it's a good thing it's not opening night right now. So, very honest response. But I think that, let's face it, that's a big test for the Capitals, because they're kind of, they're new to this idea of not having a normal off season to do your normal workouts and get your body in perfect shape. I mean, listen, they'll take it after finally winning their cup, but I think that'll be a big test both mentally and physically for them, in the opening month or two, maybe. Where is their focus? Where's their hunger? Because this is a team that partied like no other team I've ever seen before in terms of, how unbelievably happy they were to finally get over the hump. And for TJ Oshie himself, remember we talked about this too during our sit down with him. He went from St. Louis to Washington in his career. So he went from one team in St. Louis that was knocking at the door all the time that couldn't get over the hump to a Washington team that was the poster boy for that. I mean, as much as Ovechkin's the story individually, for sure, given all the criticism that he has taken over the years and finally winning, geez, TJ Oshie, that's all he knew in his career from the get-go was, we have a team to win, and it took him a long time to finally win.
Yeah, well, and he was terrific in the playoffs. And it was like, he battled through injury during the regular season. And, history tells you it's incredibly difficult to go back-to-back. Of course, Pittsburgh did it in 16 and 17, first team in the salary cap era to do so. But this Capitals team will be interesting because they basically returned the entire roster from a year ago, apart from Phil Grubauer, who started the playoffs as a starting netminder and is now in Colorado, and Jay Beagle, a really important part of that team's chemistry and a terrific penalty killer, fourth line guy now in Vancouver. But this is still a team loaded, and they're loaded with high-end talent at every position. John Carlson back with signing the big 8-year deal, and So it is going to be interesting to see how they battle through all of those issues or dynamics that all cup winners face. And as you point out, maybe even more so given their blood alcohol content heading into training camp. But to me, they're still right in the mix. So, all right. I want to ask you, let's sort of broaden it here and just, I'm not going to quite give you the last word, but who are you really looking forward to seeing? You're off to Vegas for part of training camp, but is there a player or a team that you're like, you know what, I can't wait to see how this unfolds. I wonder what's the storyline for this player or this team as we head into training camp and then the start of the 2018-19 season?
First of all, I'm glad no one's monitoring our blood alcohol content as we head into the season. But I'm really excited to see how my Cowboys bounce back Sunday against the Giants. I think that the offense will improve as time goes. Oh, you mean the NHL?
Yeah, well, you know, whatever. We're wide open here on two-man advantage, so.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think the whole Nashville-Winnipeg Central Division thing is still fascinating to me after covering that series with you and being with the Jets for three rounds. And, you know, both the Predators and Jets really taking care of business this summer, right? I mean, the Predators had a gigantic negotiation with Ryan Ellis, which was not easy, but such an important signing for them. A year from now, they'll have to do the same with Roman Josi. But and the Jets, of course, no team busier than the Winnipeg Jets, Kevin Cheveldayoff, and really some impressive work in getting all that done. And as we tape this, the only guy left, I think, is Josh Morrissey to sign. And that's an interesting case, very valuable player for them, but they'll get that done. But no, those teams are all in and, you know, they had some important off seasons to keep those bands together, and they're the teams to beat again, obviously, in the West. And, you know, St. Louis is interesting to me. Doug Armstrong, never scared to make changes. I think people are sleeping on San Jose because they didn't get Tavares. So it was sort of like a letdown, I think, in terms of national perception of them. But, you know, they kept Evander Kane. They're healthy. You know, I think there's another run in them. Of course, Vegas. So, yeah, there's some fascinating teams. And you notice I went all West because I'm jumping on a plane today to Vegas. So why not?
Well, and I'll stay with the West, too. And you couldn't be more right with the Central. And it's amazing. And, you know, I go back to our conversation with Jonathan Toews in Chicago. And, man, you know, if there's a guy who's got his game face on well in advance of training camp, it's Jonathan Toews. And people have written him off. They've written the Blackhawks off. There are still obvious questions with Corey Crawford. But, you know, it's amazing to think that in such a short period of time, like people are not assuming, but people have really relegated them to the bottom of the Central Division. And I think it's premature, but that's how difficult that division is. You mentioned, I thought Doug Armstrong did a masterful job of, you know, retooling and reinvigorating that Blues lineup after they crushing loss in game 82 against Colorado. But here's the one, I want to ask you a question. Here's the guy, not just because he played here in Atlanta, but the return of Ilya Kovalchuk after a lengthy absence, playing in the Continental Hockey League in Russia, signing with the Los Angeles Kings. They didn't get any younger, those Kings, but when Jeff Carter healthy, you got Drew Doughty, one of the top three defensemen in the NHL. You've got Jonathan Quick still, you know, for my money, top five goaltender in the NHL. You add Kovalchuk, you've got Anze Kopitar coming off a massive year. What are your expectations for Kovalchuk? Can he score 30, 35? Is the league going to be too fast for him, do you think? He's such a fascinating guy. I was looking at his stat. He's a point-a-game guy during his career in the NHL in Atlanta and New Jersey. I'm not sure he's quite Hall of Fame numbers, but boy, and I know I talked to Bob Hartley, who saw him playing in the playoffs in the KHL, says he's still got it, still a physical specimen, still a rocket shot. He thinks he's going to have a great year. Of course, Kobe did help Bob get his job with Omsk in the KHL, so maybe he's biased. But what are your expectations? What's realistic for both Kovalchuk and the Kings, do you think?
I think he'll have a good year. I don't think he'll have a great year. I think 30 goals, which would be a very good year, is attainable, especially at the power play time. One thing I always remember about aging players that come back to the NHL from the KHL is that what Jaromir Jagr said to me years ago, and of course, maybe that's not a great comparison because there's only one Jaromir Jagr, but he was saying how his time in the KHL, because people always lament that, imagine his NHL stats had he not left for a few years to Russia, but he said that he would have never come back and played all these years in the NHL had it not been for his time in Russia, because A, with the bigger ice, and B, with all the practice time. The KHL teams practice like crazy compared to NHL teams. And Yager said he came back a stronger player physically, that he was, that he basically had gotten in better shape because of his time in the KHL, and that he really felt the bounce off that when he came back over here. And I don't know if that applies to Ilya Kovalchuk or not, but, you know, in terms of how much he slowed down, but I think it's something to remember. I'll never forget that from Yager.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of stronger, I think you were much better on this episode of Two Man Advantage than in the Uber. So I'm glad you picked it up. That was good.
Well, I mean, we're not stuck in Chicago traffic at the back of an Uber, right? So there's that. Although I do have to pack now and get back to another airport en route to Vegas.
Well, it's a perfect segue then. Well, my friend, I'm glad we got this together, and hopefully no one will get traded between now and when I send the sound in. But I'm looking forward to our weekly chats, and safe travels, and have a good season, yeah. My friend.
Yeah, so big mission for you this year, shorter questions.
No.
We're going to work on that together.
Nope, that's not going to happen. But anyway, you let me know. All right, till next time, Mitt. Thank you.
Thank you.